Hour number two, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar here with you on this Wednesday morning, live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership where the buzz is always about great service. We will have Paul Kuharski from paulkuharski.com with us in the second half of the program. We got a lot of things on the Titans front to get into. One more game for the Titans before we are officially in coaching search mode at that point. So a lot of things on the PK front to get into later in the program. One of the things that we will get into with PK, Joe, is an interesting piece that Dan Pompey put together at The Athletic yesterday as regards to a potential serious candidate for the Tennessee Titans head coaching position, and that is Matt Nagy, who is the offensive coordinator for the Kansas City Chiefs. Now, you know, the idea of him being a legitimate candidate for the job is not a new thing. We've talked about Matt Nagy. He is the current betting favorite to be the next head coach for the Tennessee Titans. Not that that means everything at the end of the day, but he is the current betting favorite to be the Tennessee Titans' next head coach. And it's a really good piece by Dan Pompey at The Athletic. I would encourage you to go check it out because, you know, it gets into kind of the nitty-gritty of what went down in Chicago with him and some lessons that he learned from his first stop as head coach and his relationship with Andy Reid, his relationship with Mahomes and Kelsey, and it's really good stuff. There's a couple of things in this, Joe, for our purposes that really stood out to me. Number one, you know, it's, you know, Pompey brings this up, says, you know, Nagy tries to develop young assistant coaches on the staff, sharing mistakes he made in conducting mock job interviews. He has helped Chiefs executives too. When then assistant general manager Mike Borgonzi prepared to become a general manager, he and Nagy talked through scenarios and bounced ideas off one another. Borgonzi became general manager of the Titans in 2025, and Diana Russini has reported that Nagy is a serious candidate for the Tennessee job. So obviously, Joe, when I read that, I was like, oh, okay. So before, I mean, you knew that Nagy and Borgonzi had a relationship, but when you see that apparently before he took the Titans job and he was trying to become a general manager, him and Nagy just met with each other and started talking about it. So that was interesting. And another thing that I found interesting in this was a few lines down from that. He's talking about, you know, looking ahead to his next opportunity as head coach. And he says his focus will be on leading. He won't be a play caller. So Matt Nagy doesn't sound like he's planning on calling plays at his next stop. So those two things, we'll start there on this, Joe. What do you make of the relationship with Borgonzi, the detail in which Pompey kind of describes that here, and the idea of Nagy, if he's the head coach, not calling plays as an offensive guy?
Well, if things go poorly, at least then that'll just be something people can just skip over that. Like, just stop calling plays. Well, he's not calling plays. Yeah, it's interesting. There's a lot to it that I guess explains that, which is his tenure with the Bears, and he sort of, you know, he immediately changed the culture of the Bears, went in there, had a great year. You know, that's the double doink year where, you know, they should have won a playoff game and he was NFL coach of the year and all that stuff. And then it kind of went downhill from there. As we know, dysfunctional organization, the Chicago Bears, they'll screw it up here soon, by the way. But learning from that and what he wants to take forward. I don't know, like, if you're one of the reasons you like a Nagy is, as we've talked about a million times, the idea that you don't have to worry about replacing the OC who's doing such a great job of calling plays. So does that make him less attractive? I mean, kind of. I get it. I understand why. But also, it's like that should be, again, like some of these best coaches in this league do that, and now they can keep cycling through OCs who still get jobs because they're a part of those organizations.
Yeah.
But ultimately, the play calling goes to them. So is Nagy a good play caller? He also, Reed says in there that, you know, he gives him a chance here and there. Sometimes he jumps in, but Reed calls the plays.
Yeah.
That part of it is, frankly, to me, makes it a little bit less attractive. The Borgonzi thing makes me think that
he's going to get a serious look.
He's going to get a serious look. I think he probably would have, but, you know, he made sense to have a serious look. But if he gets this job, I'll just say this, you know, it kind of tells you, like, Borgonzi's probably got, you know, this is Borgonzi kind of running the show type thing, right?
Yeah.
And you feel like he must have a good feeling for him if they have that kind of relationship. So, and another thing about him is just look at this year with the Chiefs. I mean, do you give him any blame for that? For the way things have gone for them?
Well, Chiefs fans certainly do.
Sure.
Now, you know, what does that mean in the grand scheme of things? I don't know. Because, I mean, he is the offensive coordinator, but to your point, he's not the one calling plays out there. And if you watch Kansas City, I mean, yeah, I'm sure you, if you want to, you can trace some of their problems to some play calls and situations or some game plans. But I think a lot of the problems with the Chiefs this year on the offensive side of the ball is, number one, they're getting old. Number two, their offensive line isn't playing all that well. And number three, they have drafted poorly when it comes to trying to get some weapons in there at wide receiver, and it's catching up to them. So, like, to me, all of those things are independent of the coach. And, again, we're talking about a coach in this instance that is not the play caller. So, I don't know. Like, I don't know how much blame to put on Matt Nagy this year. I mean, the point about if he's not calling plays and he's an offensive guy, does that make him less attractive to you if you're the Titans? I think is an interesting one, because on the flip side, like, obviously, if you go hire a defensive guy, he ain't gonna be calling plays on the offensive side of things, and he's gonna have to go hire an offensive coordinator. Like, I guess, you know, Nagy being an offensive guy and being around for as long as he has, the pull that he's got, and I know PK did a piece on this, and we can get into more detail, but like the pool that all these coaches have of people that are available to them to hire that they have a history with that they know. What does that look like? Well, what does that look like with Nagy? Like, if he's not going to call the plays, are you bringing in somebody that's a competent play caller at that point? Like, if it doesn't go well for the first eight games, or you're just going to grab a hold of the reins and start calling plays, which, by the way, he did that on and off in Chicago where he was calling plays 1 minute and then not the next, and then back to calling plays. And he talks about that throughout this process in this piece by Dan Pompey as well. So, like, I hear, and we've gotten some already, like, I don't think Matt Nagy excites people. I think if you really look at the coaches available that people are talking about in connection to the Titans job, a lot of them have flaws. And if you look at, if you want to go by, like, record, as a head coach, if being a head coach to you before and previously doing this job is important, I mean, if you want to stack up his record against Saleh, or I know, you know, people brought up to us Arthur Smith, people have brought up Jim Schwartz because of their familiarity with the Titans. Well, if you stack up their records, Nagy's record is better than all of those guys. You know, it's not better than McCarthy, obviously, but it's really interesting from that standpoint of, it goes back to, I think, what I've said all along here, which is you can poke holes in a lot of these guys if you want to when it comes to the guys, the pool of candidates that have been head coaches before in this league.
Yeah, to the point about Nagy and his pool of coaches, that's one of the things about the story too. Now, again, you're going back to Chicago, but he really hadn't been around a lot. I mean, he's only 47 now, so yep. He was like 38 or whatever when he got that job. And so his staff wasn't great. He didn't have a lot. And the thing is, it's kind of like then you go back to Kansas City. So he does have some limitations compared to, you know, some other coaches out there and people they've worked with. Now, Vrabel had the same thing, really, right? I mean, Vrabel basically went to Houston from college and came here. And that's the thing. You saw with Vrabel, I think he made a mistake not going out and getting someone and promoting Todd Downing.
Yep.
We're watching the Detroit Lions this year. Oh, everything will be fine. He hires John Morton and, like, for 6 weeks, takes over play calling for him. That's the problem. Is like, so if you already have a limited pool and you're not going to call plays, what are the chances that you're just going to be able to keep replacing? And, again, you're replacing guys because you're doing well, probably.
Yeah.
So you'd like to have that problem. But it can be a problem if you're not doing that. Now, he has called plays, so even though he comes in with this idea of I'm going to be the leader, all this stuff, I'm not going to do it, he may eventually come around to, no, actually, I can do this. I can still be a leader, just like Andy Reid. I mean, obviously, he idolizes Andy Reid,
yeah,
and he wants to be Andy Reid. Well, Andy Reid
calls plays.
Yeah. and is a good leader and has a good, you know, sideline demeanor, all that stuff. So, if you read this piece, I think you come away liking him, you know, and the stuff about, like, you know, this ridiculous kids, you know, his kids are playing flag football and people are ripping his kids for, you know, the crap, stuff like that. But
sounds like Bears fans, yeah.
Well, that's true. That's a good point. Yeah, Corey Curtis probably out there screaming at kids.
Probably so.
Yeah, probably. But you like him, but I don't know that I like him more as a candidate after that.
Yeah, I mean, people on the text line right now, like JD, says not huge on Nagy. The Chiefs' offense really isn't that good. They don't have a bunch of great personnel either. Also, does his culture fit what they're wanting for the Titans? I mean, honestly, it's not a great year for the Nagy conversation, just in terms of, like, you know, the Chiefs have been so successful. If you're having this conversation last year and they're talking about hiring Matt Nagy, it's like, well, yeah. I mean, that probably makes a lot of sense. The fact that they've fallen off this year and they're not making the playoffs and their offense looked as bad as it looked, timing-wise, I understand, like, from a Titans fan's perspective, it's like, oh, yeah, let's get that in here this year.
Yeah. But that's also – that's where you can get into trouble, too, either way, being prisoner of the moment.
Yeah.
And there are absolutely personnel issues there that are part of it. DK Mountjoy says, so what's he actually doing as an OC? Not calling plays. How does that help a rookie quarterback? Again, he sounds like a Callahan. Yeah, I mean, but again, that does happen in this league. And so some of those stories have been successful, and some of them have not. So it's not a non-starter, you know, that a non-play calling OC gets an opportunity like that. It happens.
I would agree with that. I also would agree with you, where I don't know that I came away from the piece and the idea that he's not looking to call plays and thought to myself, yeah, that's more attractive for the job that I want right now.
Like, yeah.
To me, I would love the offensive play caller. Head coach, like if you're going that route with the head coach, have him call the plays. That's fine with me.
And just, yeah, and be in charge of everything to try to maximize your quarterback.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot of your thoughts to get to on the Matt Nagy front. We have some more Cam Ward thoughts to get into later in the hour as well. We'll do all that. The number 14 Vanderbilt Commodores taking on Iowa today in the ReliaQuest Bowl. Pregame at 9:30 on 94.9 The Fan. Kickoff at 11 a.m. We'll also be at T-Line at 106 Duluth Avenue in Nashville today for a Vanderbilt football watch party as well. So come on out for all that. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Game Nashville Sports Network, your home for college football bowl games, presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Twin Peaks. Today on Sports Talk 830, starting at 1 o'clock, it's Arizona State taking on Duke in the Sun Bowl. 94.9 The Fan, following the ReliaQuest Bowl, it's Michigan and Texas in the Citrus Bowl. I guess you still can't spell citrus without UT. For a list of games carried on the Game Nashville Sports Network, visit thegamenashville.com/bowlgames. Is our friend Steve Spurrier, friend of the show, going to watch the Citrus Bowl later today?
Yeah, take some shots at Texas, Spurrier. The not real UT.
Yeah.
UT Junior.
UT Junior, that's right. Taking your thoughts on Matt Nagy and the Titans head coaching search. Really good piece by Dan Pompey from The Athletic going through Nagy's tenure at Chicago and some of the things he's learned from his first stop as a head coach. Now, look, I think probably too often, Joe, there is this narrative out there that, and it's similar for some reason with coaches. We've talked about this before. They seem to get a second shot. And general managers, for whatever reason, just don't for the most part in the NFL. But, like, I am not opposed to head coaches who have clearly, you know, proven to be good assistants, good coordinators, who have been head coaches before, and for whatever reason in their first stop, it didn't really work out all that much, right? Like, Robert Saleh. Like, do I think Robert Saleh has a chance to be a good head coach in the NFL one day? I do. I understand his record with the Jets was awful. Do I think Nagy has a chance to be a good head coach in the league one day? I do. I don't know that, you know, I've said this multiple times. Some of these guys who have been head coaches before will get another chance and they will do well with it. They will figure things out from stop one to stop two and they'll be good head coaches in this league. Some of them won't. Like some of them, it'll be Josh McDaniels and it's like, yeah, it's pretty clear that that guy just needs to be a coordinator, and that's what he needs to be in the NFL. So, look, maybe Nagy's that. I have no idea. But I do think there's probably too many people that look at, well, Saleh's record sucked with the Jets, or Nagy, it fell apart on him in Chicago, or Arthur Smith, his record, his in-game decisions were awful in Atlanta, and he couldn't figure it out. Like, one of those guys, I think, is going to figure things out moving ahead here, and just because you have a tenure that did not go great the first time around, I'm not just diametrically opposed to not hiring those guys because it didn't work out the first time.
What are the best examples of coaches who didn't work out initially who then ended up working out really well? I mean, Bill Belichick would be one.
Belichick would be one, for sure.
Pete Carroll would be another. Those two, I mean, those two alone are pretty good. I'm trying to think. Well, locally,
Mularkey did not have a good start for the first couple of times, and then he got hired here and was much better.
Yeah, Mularkey had two failed tenures. I mean,
Bills
one with the Jags, and it's like you just have the Jags asterisk that goes with that. I know with the Bills, I think there was something where like they wanted him to fire his DC and he didn't want to. He was okay there. It was a short tenure, but yeah, it's a good one. Yeah, it can certainly happen. Sometimes it's like, yeah, that's just what you are. Yeah, I think Arthur Smith, and we really haven't been talking much about him, but Arthur Smith, I think, is going to be a head coach again at some point, and I'm not looking at that Atlanta tenure and saying there's just no way.
No, and I don't know that Arthur Smith is going to be a head coach this cycle, right? Like, I mean, people are naturally making the Titans connection, and I understand it because he's been here and he understands the organization. I think sometimes people place too much importance on that. Like, I understand Arthur Smith has been here. I understand Jim Schwartz has been here in different capacities. Like, Jim Schwartz, I would wonder how much Jim Schwartz has actually dealt with Amy Adams Strunk. I'm sure it's been some, but like when he was DC here, she was in the background. Yeah. Like, she was not the controlling owner.
Like, say hi when the family comes in. Hey, like, Amy!
I know he was here with Vrabel in the consultant role or whatever, and I'm sure that they cross paths at some point. But I think people probably make a little too much of the Jim Schwartz connection here. Arthur Smith, I would assume, is dealt with Amy and knows Amy. Now, could that be important? Like, knowing what you're getting into, I guess? Yeah, I also think we probably place a little bit too much importance on that. Like,
yes,
if that's a tiebreaker,
big time,
cool. Like, but that's not a reason for me to go hire Arthur Smith.
No, because it doesn't. Like, great, you can know it, and you can still get fired. Good for you. Yeah.
When again, Arthur knew it when everything was going pretty well.
Exactly.
Right?
Exactly. He was here. It was all peaches and
in his offensive coordinator role, at least
ice cream. Yeah, exactly. So I agree. I think that's a highly overrated thing. Okay, on the Nagy front, we got a Bears fan living in Nashville texting in. By the way, I hope you don't scream at kids if you don't like their coaches, if their parents who's a coach. He said, I hope like hell y'all hired Nagy for my entertainment. Ben Johnson didn't have trouble building a great staff, and he's younger than Nagy. Oh, yes, Ben Johnson is now the greatest coach of all time. Okay, back to the text. He's not good, doesn't even do the minimum call plays. He took John Fox's team to the playoffs that first year, then it was all downhill. He loved Justin Fields, by the way. Maybe he will bring him in. Y'all need someone with the track record to make this place look a little better in 3 years. When you do this again, maybe you can get somebody great. Yeah, I mean, hey, you know, again, some of these thoughts here are like we're talking about college football. You know, like John Fox's team, and you know, I mean, who knows? You know, if they get good players, they can be good, at least decent, pretty quickly. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, I think Nagy clearly is going to be central here. To me, it's not like some huge mistake if they hire him.
Yeah.
But I'm not excited about it.
Well, you know, I've said it. Mike McCarthy would be my choice. Mike McCarthy, I mean, his record is what it is. I understand that he had Aaron Rodgers as his quarterback for a long time. I thought he did a good job, not a great job, but a good job in Dallas. And it didn't go well for them in the postseason. I mean, get in line with coaches that have coached the Dallas Cowboys over the last 30 years where it's not gone very well in the postseason. So, I mean, you can blame that on all the coaches if you want, or you can look at what they've got going on in Dallas and maybe draw some different conclusions from that. So Mike McCarthy would be my guy. I think he's like number two on the betting odds. But I don't – you know, the thing about McCarthy is if they've wanted to talk to him, they could have talked to him the last 2 months, and maybe they have. I have no idea. I just have not seen, Joe, any sort of like reporting connecting those two together. Yeah. Like I just, you know, McCarthy's out there, so I think we always talk about him, but I've not seen anything actually concrete that makes me think that the Titans have been talking to Mike McCarthy this whole time.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, you had all the time in the world to deal with that. Yep, the whole Borgonzi Nagy thing, you wonder if it's a little different on the McCarthy side. He was obviously with Chad Brinker in Green Bay. And, like, do we know McCarthy wants to coach again? Has he said that?
I think he wants to coach. I think he said at one point on McAfee earlier this year that he wants to coach again.
Yeah.
But I also don't think he's just going to take any job.
No. And then if you're him, again, it's just like with all these candidates, what do you think of Cam Ward? That's the number one thing you need to know.
Yeah.
What do you think of Cam Ward? Do you think that guy has a chance to be a big-time winning quarterback in this league, or he's just kind of a talented kid that you're like, yeah, I don't know if I'm hitching my wagon to that?
Right. 615-737-1025 is our phone number. Speaking of Cam Ward, another piece on him yesterday, which I took some issue with some things in there. We will get into that. Paul Kuharsky will be with us as well. All that coming up. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ian Safar. Paul Kuharsky from PaulKuharsky.com with us on the program. PK, how are you doing? What's going on?
Greetings, boys. Greetings, Nashville. Happy New Year. I wasn't up early enough to hear Vols fans defending themselves. Well, are there any Vols fans that just say, like, wow, not a good year?
I think so.
I did.
I think there's plenty of Vols fans in it. I think Vols fans go the other way. They're like, Josh Heupel. You know, it's like there's some people that are like
– I hear a lot of the other Vols fans that, like, make excuses for everything. Huh? Pavia's a fluke, and we're still better than Vanderbilt, and – that those kind.
Yeah, yeah. I do think there'll probably be some Vols hate watching of Vanderbilt today and Pavia.
Big Iowa Hawkeyes fans?
Yeah. Go
the Hawkeyes sign?
Yeah.
God, you got to be committed to the hate watching if you're going to watch the Iowa Hawkeyes play football.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be impressive hate watching.
Were you at that game, Joseph?
What, yesterday?
Yeah.
I was not.
Yeah, you don't attend games.
I don't. I like to sit in my home.
It's pretty impressive.
Thank you.
Well, I think of it two ways.
I wear sweatpants every day now.
One, pretty lazy by you, but two, they probably don't want you to go. Like, if you wanted to go, they'd be like, Joe, we can't really credential you for that.
We'd rather you not write. If you could not write, that'd be great.
We've got 11 writers that rank ahead of you, and that's a pretty high-ranking bowl game.
About 17, actually.
In your backyard.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what, Joe? How about you just hang around home? Do nothing. Okay.
You going to any playoff games?
I don't think so.
No, okay. No.
just checking.
No. Well, I mean, first off, the round that he's qualified to go to is already over.
Well, there you go.
Qualified.
And did he go to any of those? No.
It's like, wow, Rex Road's out there.
He's like a James Madison type beat writer.
Yeah, he's James Madison, Oregon.
And he wasn't allowed to go to that.
Maybe if I'd have gone, it would have been a better game.
Maybe so.
Never know.
Maybe so. I was perusing your workplace yesterday at the Athletic. Jeff Howe, and Ian sent us this, came out with a piece on Cam Ward.
Oh, yeah, this is good. Hey, we're going to have a guy who's never seen Cam Ward live do a Cam Ward piece.
Well, there's that.
I think Jeff came through the summer, didn't he? I think Jeff came through this summer.
Yeah, well, you know, Cam hasn't changed at all since the summer. Let's have that guy do the quarterback piece.
Well, he's talking
I think
about
he writes, Joe. He writes Joe. A weekly quarterback piece, doesn't he? I think so. Yeah.
But the Joe, QB stock report. So not even a contribution line from Joe.
Yeah, I had no idea this was coming. The QB. I don't write about the Titans.
There was another Nashville piece this week also that Joe
was there?
Had. No. Did you write something this week?
Did you know Joe writes for The Athletic?
Maybe I read something by you. Did you write something this week?
I wrote something about Vanderbilt.
Yeah, I might have read that.
Okay.
It's good to know.
Thanks, Paul.
What was it?
Keeping up.
Mr. Magoo.
What was it?
What else did you read? Did you do a crossword, buddy?
I read everything at the Athletic this week. I'm always shocked when I see something by you. What was it? Can you give me more specifics?
I wrote about
something on Vanderbilt.
I wrote about Kwane Doster, who got shot dead 21 years ago. Okay.
What else?
That's what I wrote.
That was it?
Yeah.
In the middle of all this college football going on, he wrote a historical piece.
This is turning into a bashing Rex Road segment. Yeah, happy birthday to you.
Thanks. Fascinating, Paul's reading habits, too. Are these on the toilet, or what are we doing here?
No, I read on my chair a lot.
Oh, good for you. Yeah. Okay. Next time when you come in here, maybe try to remember what you read.
So the
I've memorized the list.
There, a lot of what Hal brings up in this piece, we've talked a lot about, from you know the completion percentages and obviously, you know, the firing of the coach early in the year. So all those things we've talked about. He does say one thing in here that I hear a lot, that I look at very recent examples in the NFL, and there's several of them. And I don't know why we keep saying this. You know, it talks about the coach being fired, the offensive line issues that they've had. He's been sacked 55 times, which is tied for the most in the NFL. He's playing for a team that's not any good. We all know all those things. And he says, quote, such disruption and adversity always stunts a young quarterback's development. And I look at this and I'm like, I guess I would have to know exactly what you mean. Like, are you talking first year? Because there are very recent examples. I mean, Drake May played for a horrible, horrible Patriots team last year. Doesn't look like his development's been stunted. He may win the MVP this year. Caleb Williams played for a bad Bears team last year. A Bears team which, by the way, fired their coach in the middle of the season. And things are going pretty well for him this year.
Maybe it's the best formula.
Well, I mean, I'm not necessarily saying that, but like, there's, I think there's been way too much of this thought process out there of, well, if you play for a horrible team and you fire your coach, your quarterback is like automatically screwed. And we have very recent examples where not only is that not the case, in the second year, the quarterbacks are playing very, very well. So I just think we probably need to stop using that so much as a crutch.
Yeah,
as
think,
we do.
I think that's just a great point. Also,
it's a presumption, but it's really not rooted in fact.
Also, the last month, Twitter's been loaded with clips of Cam Ward making plays that all these quarterback gurus / film studiers are raving about.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I understand there's snippets and he's not doing that, but he's played much better in the last month. So he's developing.
Yeah.
Even in these crappy circumstances, there's been the development that we all said we wanted to see in November, December. It's later and not as extensive and everything. But in the crap that the Titans have been this year, with crappy receivers, on a crappy team, with a crappy defense, with coaching turnover and everything, there's been development. So even before he gets into the second year with the new coach and all of that, there's development.
Yeah, the coaching hire is going to be huge, obviously. And then how much more development can be had? So this part of this piece, I thought, and we've talked about it, but I'll read, I think this is interesting and important. Quote, while evaluating Ward, one executive said it's important to start with the plays when things were structured around him. To be sure, he's made a flurry of improbable throws to display his arm talent, including some wild moments against the Seahawks in Week 12, but his progress would be viewed as more sustainable when making the simpler plays on schedule. And then there's a quote from this executive, you know, the offensive line terrible, all this stuff. I'm going to read a little bit more. Ward's throwing motion was debated by evaluators before the draft. It wasn't a surprise. While beauty is the eye of the beholder with the QB's liberty, there are some around the NFL who are concerned his accuracy will have a ceiling if he doesn't refine his mechanics. Here's a quote from executive. Quote, the great equalizer is his ability to scramble and make plays. Who knows if he'll ever be strong on schedule? It's hard to know how much it's sustainable to make plays off schedule outside of the offense. End quote. And that, to me, is – that's – to me, what it comes down to is, you know, is he going to get to where the bread and butter stuff is reliable?
I think his accuracy will have a ceiling – after he refines his mechanics, when he refines his mechanics. I think that was a little kind, if you will. I mean, I think his accuracy is poor now in large part because of the mechanics, but I think we've all agreed there's a ceiling to his mechanics, no matter what he does.
But
Josh Allen in terms of improving his mechanics.
How do you know?
It's baked in the cake.
I don't know
that.
Well,
it's baked in the cake for almost every quarterback who comes into the league. You're only going to be so much more accurate than you've been unless you're a massive exception to the rule. And in our recent lives, we've seen one guy do massive things in terms of improving his accuracy, and he's a MVP quarterback who's one of the best of his generation. I don't know that Cam Ward's going to be that. I'm pretty confident. I think Cam Ward's going to be a good quarterback, but I don't think he's going to be a Josh Allen-level quarterback.
Yeah, I think that's
so
fair.
Good enough then?
Good enough. I think he could be good enough, yeah.
Okay.
I've been pretty consistent in that. I think he could be a good to very good quarterback, but I don't think that comes with a massive improvement in completion percentage.
Well, and it's, again, you're coming off a game, too, where the plays that he made that we're talking about are largely off schedule, right? Like some of the plays he made on Sunday were unbelievable. I mean, if you put together a highlight reel of some of the best plays he's made all season, you're going to find a lot of them that just happened in that game. And then you have a second half where it wasn't very good. Like the second half from him on Sunday was bad.
It disappeared.
So I mean, it's, I understand progress is not linear. We've talked about that a lot. And I agree with PK that on the whole, the last 5-6 weeks, I think he's made some strides here. But again, we're not talking about strides that he's making on a consistent basis where he's just sitting in the pocket and delivering the football accurately every time when the pocket's clean. A lot of these plays that we're talking about is breaking, you know, breaking contain, getting the outside, throwing the ball on the run. The one thing that I think you can see, and we've talked about this a little bit too, Joe, is diagnosing what he's looking at before the play. I think you can see that out there. Like, he looks way more comfortable at what he's seeing with the defense.
Yeah, calling the protection stuff.
You know? And you want more of that. Wins from dropping back, right? Wins on the play that's called from the pocket. But that may be the least fair place to judge him based on what they have, because they don't get any separation or wins. And while the offensive line's gotten better, you know, there's still pressures in those situations. So I think that if you're scoring, like, where is it most fair to judge him? Where is it least fair to judge him? Particularly on the separation front, I think it's maybe hardest to judge him there. But, yeah, on some of the basic throws there, he's not at his best. He's more comfortable on the move. And I think it's on the new coach and the coordinator and the quarterback coach to find the balance of those two. Like, I'm not saying call broken plays, but but putting him on the move is not a bad thing. I mean, we've
scramble
seen,
drill from the start.
Yeah.
Just call guess, scramble just drill. Just guess.
Yeah. Cam, wouldn't take
have,
it and run.
Wouldn't have been the worst thing at some of the early games this year.
Not have. Would not have. 615-737-1025, our phone number. Paul Kuharski is with us for the rest of the program. We'll have the rant coming up next. You're listening to Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5 The Game.
Sometimes he wakes up on the wrong side of the bed. And sometimes he's just, well, Joe.
Awkward moment. Let's do it.
This is the Rex Rant, now on Robbie and Rex Road.
To Rex Road, happy birthday. What's going on?
And I was hoping you'd forget. Damn it.
A lot of yak in there, and, you know, it's soft defense. And
is our friend Steve Spurrier, friend of the show, going to watch the Citrus Bowl later today?
Pitch and catch.
It's the excessive sex and the excessive violence.
Borderline erotic.
Are these on the toilet, or what are we doing here?
I would let them pee around the field.
I know that he just gets his jollies from this, okay?
Which one of you has gout?
Gonna get to you, girl. Step by step.
It is time for the rant, brought to you by Functional Medicine of Tennessee. Heal from the inside out. Check them out at functionalmedicineoftennessee.net. Paul Kuharski with us today, and I believe he's got control
first
of the rant
off,
today.
First off, is Rexy one of these "I wish you forgot my birthday" guys? He's like a middle-aged woman.
It. He doesn't seem to enjoy it.
It's odd. It's
I'm like a middle-aged woman.
Well, not no insult to middle-aged women,
what are you
but
trying to say
of the people I know who wish their birthday was forgotten, few of them are 53-year-old men. Like, it's your birthday. You come in. Hey, thanks for the good wishes. Here we go with another year. I'm going to eat some cake today. And on we go.
No spicy chicken today, though.
Yeah, you got to
avoid
the spicy.
That's basically what I did, asshat, okay?
Said, oh, I wish you forgot. This is a rant about omission. The Dan Pompey article on Nagy is excellent. Dan
oh, good. You ripped The Athletic more.
Dan
awesome.
Pompey is excellent. Colleague.
All due respect.
Colleague on the Pro Football Hall of Fame selection committee. Name drop. Committee drop. But he says in the Nagy article that he's a mentor for young coaches and that he took that very seriously. And then he doesn't mention any young coaches that he's done anything with. And the reason he doesn't mention that is because here's the list of risers out of the Matt Nagy Chicago Bears staff. Chris Jackson, who was his assistant wide receiver coach, is now the wide receiver coach and passing game coordinator at Texas. Are we impressed by that? Austin King he was low ranking on the Bears staff. He's the tight end coach at Denver for Sean Payton. That's not bad. Mike Snyder was his assistant quality control coach, is now an offensive assistant for the Houston Texans, but is allegedly a riser. That's not much of a rise so far. And Donovan Raiola was his assistant offensive line coach and is now the offensive line coach at Nebraska, which is a position of some esteem historically.
Is he still going to be? Because
I don't know.
The kid's leaving.
All right, so maybe he's outgoing. These are not, he might have mentored these guys, but they're not big risers. So there's nobody that I could find on Matt Nagy's Chicago staff who he's mentored into like an accelerated career. And it's been a while. So he might have mentored them, but nobody's like shooting forward.
Mentored them poorly. He didn't say mentored well.
Mentor. Yeah.
He didn't say I mentored him well.
Yeah. I mean, the way that read, I'm like saying, well, there should be some Nagy guys around the league who have done something. There's a Nagy tree.
Maybe
there's a Nagy branch.
little bush.
Yeah. Shrub.
The Nagy shrub around the league.
Well, maybe when he gets this job, that's when it really will kick in.
Oh, see? And by the way, you guys were talking about him not calling plays here. The obvious play caller that would come with him, to me, is Mike Kafka. So I wrote the other day, you mentioned the piece, Robbie, about if you look at all these defensive coordinators whose names have surfaced, they do not have great connections. You could read this at paulkuharski.com. They don't have great connections from the places that they've been. So I would think Borgonzi would be of influence. If Nagy doesn't get a head coaching job somewhere else and he doesn't get this head coaching job, he's not under contract in 2026 to the Chiefs on purpose for an opportunity like to get a head coaching job. He doesn't need to be free. But to get another offensive coordinator job where he could come and call plays, that's very convenient. He could come here and call plays. And Mike Kafka, who's on the outs with the Giants, obviously, when they fire their interim coach, could come here and call plays for an inexperienced defensive coordinator who's promoted, who might not have a great pipeline of candidates. And that would be similar to Mike Vrabel when he got here and he wanted Ryan Day, which was overambitious. There was a second guy he wanted who I can't remember, who he didn't get. And at that point, John Robinson said, hey, why don't you give Matt LaFleur a look? I interviewed him for your job. You beat him out. But I think he'd be a great offensive coordinator for you. And he put them together, and Vrabel ultimately hired him. And it wasn't a great year, but, obviously it was great talent.
To the great benefit of Robbie's team, though.
Yeah. It's going great.
So I'd look for that. I'd look
pretty
for the potential
record
of that.
What did you make of what he talked about, Pompey, in this piece of Mike Borgonzi preparing, when he was preparing to become a general manager, how he talked with Nagy through scenarios, they bounced ideas off one another. Again, I don't know the depth of what that means. Like, how detailed were these conversations? Did, like, he meet with Matt Nagy for weeks and they just talked about a bunch of stuff? I have no idea. But what do you make of that that partnership that obviously, when you're talking about the head coaching opening for the Titans, the first thing people are going to point to with Borgonzi is a pre-existing relationship with Nagy.
Yeah, look, if they end up hiring Matt Nagy, Mike Borgonzi is going to have to really show us that it's more than him hiring his guy. We were talking about this in the press room the other day. Chad Brinker, when he hired Borgonzi, is it John Eric Sullivan? I think I'm getting the name right, from Green Bay.
Yep.
He had a very strong connection to, and that was the presumptive hire, and he allowed the process to play out and hired somebody else, which probably was hard for him on some level to call his boy in Green Bay and say, hey, man, I'm going a different direction, even though that was kind of the clear thing. I would hope that Borgonzi, and we're saying Borgonzi, I still think it's going to be this committee of Borgonzi, and Brinker, and to a degree, McKenzie involved and Ziegler involved, this four-pack of power.
That's a lot of people.
Amy.
Yeah. And look, Kenneth, I'm not, let's get back to that in a second, but that they will sort this thing out and allow somebody to rise to the top, and maybe it's Nagy, but maybe it's somebody else, and the percentages would indicate it's somebody else. In terms of the Amy thing, you know, I talked to – I want to be careful with what I say. I do not get the sense that it is running through the organization that at this point that she's not going to be involved. Now, that doesn't mean that she is going to be involved. I don't think there's been a decree one way. I don't think the process is sorted out yet with them. I think they're sitting down Monday or Tuesday and saying, all right, this is having a meeting and talking about how this is going to work. But I don't think she's yet announced her intentions to her brass as to what she's doing or not doing.
No declarative statements have been made in terms of her involvement level.
Will she announce? Like, does she need to announce her intentions? Hear ye.
But that has been out there through several national people that she's not going to be involved. It makes it sound like she's made some she's announcement told them that. To them. Well, I don't believe that that's the case.
And I would assume that when you're, you know, it's one thing to be planning for this, but next week it's go time. Like, it's time to start the process of getting your next coach in here. So how's that process going down? Like, you need to know if you're Borgonzi and Brinker. All right, how much of a free reign do I have to, like, go make this hire? And how much of this part of the process, like, do you need to meet all these guys? Like, do you need to be involved in all the meetings? Do you not want to be involved in any of the meetings until it's you're cutting it down to the final two people? Like, how involved do you want to be with this thing?
Yeah. Yeah. Sounds fun. Sounds organized. Ed says, if it turns out to be Nagy, is it fair to question the level, like to your point, to the level of due diligence that was actually done with the search? I'd say this, though. If you're Borgonzi, this hire is your job, right? Just like Cam, the drafting of Cam Ward's,
decisions that determine your fate. Absolutely.
It's just hard for me to believe that I just go with my buddy. You know, I know him. We're friends. He helped me get this job, so let's just do that. It's hard for me to buy that. That he wouldn't be open to someone better if they emerge in an actual, detailed, legitimate search. Why would you not do that?
I think they absolutely will do that. I also think that this list that we're working off, you know, and I mean, those are the names that are out there. So people are writing about and talking about the names that are out there. I don't think by any means that's the list. Like that's it.
Definitive,
These defensive coordinators plus Nagy, plus now there was a report, McCarthy, and who was the other one? I think one offensive guy that somebody added to the mix. I mean, this is a trickling list. I think it's probably coming from reporters gathering agent gossip. I don't think anybody in the Titans organization is saying, let me email you this. This is our preliminary list. The Titans are not of that ilk with national media. Now, I do think a lot will funnel through the national media because that's just how these searches go. And the agents are going to be, you know, headlining it more than Borgonzi or Brinker or McKenzie or Ziegler.
Yes, or Jeff Fisher or whoever else is possibly involved in this.
615-737-1025, our phone number. A lot more to get to with PK. We'll take your questions on the Titans at 615-737-1025. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025 The Game.